This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're speaking this afternoon on Keeping the Faith about Franz Joseph Haydn's The Seven Last Words of Christ, and we're talking with Richard Young, musician. Are you there, Richard?
Yes, I am, Steve. Hi.
Welcome. And we're also speaking via the magic of electronical communication with religion scholar Martin Marty. Can you hear me, Dr. Marty?
Check it in.
Great. Let me start with a question with Richard Young. You've been doing this project with the Vermeer String Quartet of playing The Seven Last Words of Christ by Haydn around the world, and you've recently put together this collection of CDs and a book of meditations. Why, for this topic of the seven last words of Christ, did you pick a rabbi and a Hindu and people of other faiths than Christians to write some meditations to go with this performance and this music?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me back up just a little bit. My group, the Vermeer String Quartet, we play virtually the entire string quartet repertoire.
Of course.
And I think with every piece we play, our motivation is to respect the motivation of the composers, no matter what that is. And in the in this example, there's just no question what it was that motivated Haydn to write the Seven Last Words of Christ. And so we make every effort to reflect that in our performances. Now, I feel that the first responsibility is to satisfy the thirst of the faithful. This is a religious piece. There are no words to Christians that are any more holy than these. But somehow, though, Haydn was able to enable this piece is able to transcend and resonate beyond Christian sanctuaries. And Jane Addams talked about the common human nature of people, the things that bring us together or make us more alike are more powerful than those that separate us. And somehow Haydn was able to tap into that common human nature in a way that enables this piece and Jesus' seven last words to resonate far beyond, I guess, its original boundaries. Now, therefore, when we present this, we try to make everyone feel welcome. And indeed, there's something in this piece for everyone. And I guess that has been reflected in our choice of speakers. Well, you mentioned Pandit Ashok Bhatt, the Hindu. Of course, I have to be careful about which word I ask him to meditate on, because you can imagine that not every one of the seven last utterances would be a good fit. And so for him, I chose the last utterance from the cross, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. These are certainly words that any religious person can get his or her arms around. Now, with the rabbis, the references are much more specific, the possibilities. Two of the last utterances from the cross actually are quoted originally in the Psalms of David. Into your hands I commend my spirit is found in Psalm 51, and Eli, Eli, my God, why have you forsaken me, is from Psalm 22. And so these are real natural jumping-off points for rabbis in their meditations. Now, there's one other hook, connection to Jews and rabbis that's possible, and that is that's from the first word on the cross, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. And here the reference is, well, it's not specific, but it's very clear, and it's a much more delicate connection, and because in the minds of many Christians over the years, the them and they refer to the Jews. And maybe I should let Dr. Marty expand on that. Actually, he gave a meditation from this point of view at our performance at University of Chicago last Wednesday.
Professor Marty, are you able to respond to that?
Yeah, I'll try to pick up from there. Maybe 45 seconds first on why Richard Young and the quartet pick people sometimes from other than Christian traditions. If WILL will allow me one line of German, They used to say in the 19th century, wer ein Religion kennt, der kein Religion kennt. Whoever knows only one religion knows no religion. And I think we are finding more and more that to have a mirror held up and have someone else interpret words that are sacred to us throws a very different light on it. I'm studying gift-giving, and it's interesting to hear what gift-giving is to Muslims, to medieval Catholics, to Buddhists, etc., to reflect my Christian giving. So that's a little background for one of the reasons that not only Christians are speaking to Christians, and why some of them take the opportunity. Now, to the specific point, we have to remember, first of all, there are 20 bad centuries, and therefore, whenever you deal with something that relates to the abrasion between Jews and Christians today or through those centuries, you have to go right back to the roots. And the roots were so interesting to me because everybody in this story, except Pontius Pilate and the Roman soldiers, is a Jew. We have here a very tense family quarrel. When these words are written down in the Gospels a generation or two after the utterances and after the incident, by then there was a great deal of, polarization, religious polarization of a profound character. Somebody once said, aggression like cherry begins at home, and you have these fights because it's a family quarrel. Now, again, what does today's group do with that? We have to remember that most places in the world where there are Christians, there aren't any Jews. We're the fifth most Christian continent as far as numbers are concerned, and there are fewer Jews in the whole world than there are Southern Baptists in the United States. So you're talking really the Middle East and the United States and some Western Europe. That's where you have to face up to the issue. If we were doing this today in Sri Lanka or in Yokohama, it wouldn't even be an issue. Not that there's not anti-Semitism, but it's not the kind of thing in which people have to learn to get along with each other. Therefore, I think when at Richard's and the quartet's invitation, a rabbi steps up, he knows that there isn't a Jew in the world thinks he's going to give the ball game away, sell the store. He's not going to do anything that violates the integrity of what it is to be a Jew. He is going to comment on what Rabbi Jesus is recorded as having said, and showing how that here listens in Jewish ears. I had a meditation this year on Father, forgive them, and I just mentioned that that was referred to there had to be not just Roman soldiers and not just a group of Jews. It has to be anybody who in their heart still carries on this way. And so I think that we see in these events both the courage to face differences and the solace that comes from having heard each other, and maybe new resolves come out of it.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with religion scholar Martin Marty in Chicago, from the University of Chicago, professor emeritus there, and with Richard Young, who is the violist for the Vermeer String Quartet. Richard Young recently edited a book called Echoes from Calvary, Meditations on Franz Joseph Haydn's The Seven Last Words of Christ. Tell us a little bit about how that project got started, and then I'd like to let listeners hear a sample from some of the CDs that are from the two CDs are included with the book.
Sure. Well, I guess we've been playing this piece in Haydn's original format, which is to say with spoken meditations prior to each section of music. We've been doing this since the late 80s. With a different speaker for each one of the words. And boy, if you multiply that by the dozens of performances that we've done in America and Europe, even in Australia, it's by now a very long list of meditations that have been written for these performances. I would say it's probably approaching 200 at this point. Word got around that there was this viola player in Chicago sitting on this wealth of material, and so I was approached by a major publisher to put them all together and to make a collection of this. And actually what Roman Littlefield has done
That's the publisher.
Yeah. Why didn't you spell the name of the publisher? We have to get that out.
It's R-O-W-M-A-N and Littlefield, L-I-T-T-L-E-F-I-E-L-D. Roman and Littlefield are the publishers of Echoes from Calvary.
Thank you.
What they've done is to make this a good bit more than just a collection of about 10 or 12 or so meditations on each of the seven words. It also includes articles or essays. I wrote a good portion of this, I guess, including an analysis or a discussion of the music, of Haydn's music, and how it connects to these words from the cross. Jean Bethke Elstein, who's one of our leading ethicists, wrote a chapter on the ethical significance of these words in contemporary life. Professor Grover Zinn from Oberlin College wrote a chapter on the history of meditation on these words, even prior to Haydn. And then Dr. Marty, boy, as he's done his whole career, at the very end of the book, pulls together a lot of these themes in a chapter called Looking Back and Summing Up.
Dr. Marty, how did you first hear about this project and get involved, not just the book, but in terms of producing meditations for the performance?
Well, first of all, my own scholarship and my own faith have always been fused with interest in the arts. I'm married to a musician, and I am a son of a church organist and brother of a couple others. So, I'm a Lutheran, and Luther often used to say next to theology, he liked music best, and I'm thoroughly convinced he liked music better than theology. So I can never think of a text that I've ever heard with music without thinking of the music. And I think that music often transcends boundaries of religions and the rest. So that starts. Second thing is I like string quartets. I have great collections. I have an awful lot of Vermeer. I hear them on occasion. Didn't know Richard personally, but he called me one time and asked whether I'd be at all interested. And yes, I was interested right away. First of all, I want to say for the quartet itself, it took some courage. They had to come out with some investment in the ventures. This doesn't pay for itself right off. It doesn't pay for itself right off. I think another thing that should be said, and that's to me a very interesting thing, is just as when I now and then would write the program notes for the music of Baroque in Chicago when they'd sing the St. John Passion, which creates problems for Jews much worse than the seven last words of Christ, I remind myself of some of the chorus is Jewish, half the board is Jewish, half the audience is Jewish, and it always is an interesting question to me, how do you pay due respect to them for whom it's basically performance, while also in the room would be Christians for whom it's just as much an act of worship. So it's an intellectual problem that I think also tantalized me. But then to be invited to undertake this with these four venturesome musicians was nice. And Richard and I have often sat down together and gone through the yellow pages and looked at who has something interesting to say. I know some folks in the religious world, and I've recommended some. So it's just been an engrossing thing, and I'm one of the three that gets invited back every year. I'm very careful not to stutter sometime because I might get bumped.
How many of the seven words have you now written meditations for?
Well, Richard could probably tell that better than I. I've done all of them.
You've done all of them.
Yeah, we've been at it more than 7 years, so
great.
I've done all of them, I'm sure.
All right, and we'll ignore your understatement about knowing some people in the religious world.
Well, but anyway, so it's just plain a delight, and it's very clear that for Richard and other of the people there, paying respects to genius, taking a composer like Haydn, I must have 40 of his string quartets on my shelf. I write music to string quartet. I mean, I write books to string quartet music. And then I get the scores and study them so I know what I've been hearing. Well, Haydn is one of the masters of this, and to pick maybe his most profound one, I've listened to a lot of others, and I may be overly attuned to this one, but they pay respects to his genius, and he said, let's do it this way. And for Richard and, well, Shmuel Ashkenazi, who was the first violinist, is himself Jewish, for him to say, if this is what Papa Haydn wanted, that's what I want. And I have such respect for people like that that I was glad to climb aboard.
You know, Steve, I should tell you about my first conversation with Dr. Marty. I was in the process, this is about 10 years ago, and I was in the process of putting together our CD of the Seven Last Words of Christ. And this is still available on Alden Productions. Everyone who advised me told me that any group that purports to include the most important theologians and preachers, and that's what I was trying to put together here, any such list has to include Martin Marty. And so, that was just a no-brainer. And so he's not hard to find. I looked him up in the phone book and called him up. And I said, Dr. Marty, I'm Richard Young, the violist in the Vermeer Quartet. And he says, oh yes, I know who you are. I have some of your recordings right here. And I said, I'd like to know if you might be interested in doing one of the meditations on a recording of the Seven Last Words of Christ. And he said, well, of course, thanks very much. And, oh, by the way, which version are you doing, the one by Haydn or the one by Heinrich Schütz? And I have to admit to you that here I am, just totally disarmed by this, because I'm the music expert. Dr. Marty is the expert in theology. I'm supposed to know that there is a version of this piece by Heinrich Schütz, and this was news to me. I learned from Dr. Marty that there is indeed this version, and, he even offered to loan me his recording. So I learned in my very first minute with Dr. Marty on the phone, I guess what everybody learns sooner or later is that there are no limits at all to his expertise, and I'm just really grateful, though, that I've been able to learn from him and that he's been part of this project.
Well, let's let listeners get a sense of what's part of what this is like if they've never had the good fortune of hearing it at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Champaign-Urbana at the University of Illinois, or at Rockefeller Chapel at University of Chicago, or many other places around the world, a performance of the Seven Last Words of Christ by the Vermeer String Quartet. Let's let folks have a sense of this and also what's in this book. You've selected, Richard Young, you've edited this book, Echoes from Calvary, that include these spoken meditations as well as the music of Haydn played by the quartet. And you've chosen for today for us to play a cut from the one of the two CDs that's included with this paperback book. On the topic of I Thirst, tell us a little bit about who will be speaking this, about John Shea, who's speaking this.
Yes, well, John Shea, actually, I was introduced to him by Dr. Marty, who must know everyone in connected to religion in the English-speaking world and beyond. Jack Shea, I think at the time, was he not a Catholic priest at the
yes.
time, Dr. Marty? Yeah, and he's since left that role.
He's still a strong Catholic storyteller.
Yes, and he's a prolific writer, and... boy, the meditation he did on I Thirst, it was just so beautiful and just right on the money.
He's taught at Notre Dame and Loyola, and let's go now to his spoken meditation, which is included on one of the CDs in Echoes from Calvary, edited by Richard Young.
Knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the Scripture might be fulfilled, Jesus said, I thirst. It was not the first time. Once before in John's gospel, he thirsted. Give me a drink, he asked the Samaritan woman. But by the end, he had given her a drink and told his disciples that his food and drink was to do the will of his Father. And the will of the divine source is to connect all there is to divine love. And so he thirsts. To make that connection, to be that channel, to become a flow of grace to every moment of crucifixion. His thirst is to become water to our parched throats, wine to the failing weddings of our lives. When we are at our end, when our resources seem depleted, when our energies are wasted, when our opportunities are gone, when we reach in the empty air for we know not what, then he cries again, I thirst. And his unquenched thirst brings him to us. We are no longer alone. The connection is made. The channel is open. Love invisible yet real, flows. Until the end of history, he cries, "I thirst," and becomes the companion of every emptiness, the secret fullness of every lack.
Hello? Yes.
Brother to our suffering, peace in our pain, love where least expected.
We've just heard one of the meditations on the seven last words of Christ that are part of the performance of Haydn's The Seven Last Words by the Vermeer String Quartet, included in a new book published by Roman and Littlefield, and we play this with their permission, as well as the permission of the editor who's on the air with us today, Richard Young. Richard, tell us, how is this set up? The person reads the meditation, and then the quartet plays the music that Haydn wrote. How do you think about this when you are playing as the violist in the Vermeer String Quartet after these different meditations?
Well, of course, we played this piece for years before we were ever obliged to relate to it in its religious context. We did this piece the way most other string quartets have do it on the road, and that is just playing the music. And so, when it was when we were asked to do this piece in '88 in a special live broadcast from WFMT in Chicago, WFMT Radio, they Norm Pellegrini, the program director there, insisted on us doing it the way Haydn wanted. And so this was really the first time that we got the whole picture. And I tell you, when we, as well as we know this music, the music changes and our relationship with the music changes as different light is cast on it by these different meditations. By the way, Steve, we're not hearing the speaker or the music on our feed here.
Ah, I'm sorry about that. Well, let's. What we've just heard is the spoken word by John Shea, and part of the book and CD project includes a section of the book where the editor, Richard Young, that we're speaking with today, talks about the words and the music. And the second CD that we're now going to play a cut from on the I Thirst. Richard, tell us, you may not be able to hear it given the way the electronic thing is working out, but we're going to go to cut 11 on the second CD that follows I Thirst, and tell our listeners a little bit of introduction to what they're about to hear.
Sure. Well, I Thirst is, they say this is one of the shortest complete sentences in the English language, and it consists of only two words, one syllable each, two syllables altogether, and if we go back to Greek, if we translate this to Greek, which was the language the Gospels were originally written, it's a one-word complete sentence, dipho, but two syllables yet again. And if we use Latin, which was the what Haydn used in his settings, it's again a one-word complete sentence, but yet again two syllables, sitio. Well, Haydn economized in a similar way by composing a melody, a complete melody, using only two notes. And they go like, I thirst, like that. And they spread out over a relatively long period of time, still a complete melody. Well, he doesn't stop there. He crafts this ingenious little pizzicato accompaniment in the inner voices. And
the inner voices being the second violin and the viola.
Right, and it consists of the very same two notes that we heard in the two-note melody, except now they're about eight times faster, and they alternate back and forth, repeated over and over again, like dum bum 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 bum, but it's the very same two notes. And, well, let's hear a little bit of that track 11, and
okay.
You'll hear this beautiful little pizzicato accompaniment, which actually to some people suggests little droplets of liquid, which might refer to the sour wine that's mentioned in this verse of Scripture. And then you'll hear over that this beautiful, frail, vulnerable, complete two-note melody in the first violin.
Okay, let's go to the Vermeer String Quartet with I Thirst from Haydn's Seven Last Words of Christ. Back live with Richard Young and making comments about this music that we've just heard from the Vermeer String Quartet. Could you hear that time, Richard?
No.
Okay.
Believe me,
it was beautiful. Now, tell us a little bit about the next track we're going to hear, track 12, which is 5 seconds long.
Yeah. Well, this piece has at the very beginning, right before the music you just heard, a little introductory flourish and something to get our attention, perhaps, or maybe even to send us a signal. And Haydn could have used any number of notes for this little flourish. He could have used three notes, like yum ba bam, something like that, or maybe a four-note little gesture, yup ba ba bam. Well, what do you think he chooses? Well, not coincidentally, he chooses a two-note introductory gesture.
Let's listen to that right now. And we've heard it.
Yeah. Well, you know, every piece in Haydn's time and our time has to have a meter, a time signature, and that's indicated by those numbers at the beginning of the first line of music. And, in Haydn's day, there were not nearly so many possibilities as we have today because music is rhythmically more complicated now than then. Well, he had, maybe a dozen possibilities. There was 4-4, four beats per measure, and every quarter note gets a beat. There was 2-4, there was 3-8, 6-8, 9-8, 12-8. Well, what do you think he chose? He chose 2-2. These coincidences are piling up here, and we're beginning to realize it's no coincidence at all that he uses a two-note melody. The same two notes form the accompaniment. We have this two-note introductory flourish, and we have a meter, which is 2-2. Now, it shouldn't surprise us at all now that the music that we hear at the beginning, within the first minute or so of music, has two very different characters. Now, the first character is pretty obvious. It's a literal, it's taking the words literally, and we can imagine this dying man, his lips are blistered, and his tongue is parched, and his throat is closing up, and he's barely able to choke out the words, "I thirst." But then in the very next phrase, we hear music which is filled with strength and almost a defiant self-righteousness. And, well, what's this about? We suspect a metaphor, but of course the metaphor that most easily comes to mind, that of Jesus thirsting for God, doesn't work at all. And so, let's think about that as you hear this next track, track 13.
We're going to hear a piece of music that has a very extreme difference in dynamic. It will start softly, and then we'll hear a change. I'm just warning our engineer what to expect. Let's now hear this track 13 from Haydn's Seven Last Words on I Thirst.
Thank you.
We have just heard a portion of Haydn's I Thirst section from the Seven Last Words of Christ. We're talking, played by the Vermeer String Quartet. We're talking with Richard Young on Keeping the Faith this afternoon on WILL, as well as with Professor Martin Marty about this piece. So, Richard, what do you think is being said in this music?
Well, there is a metaphor here going on in this second phrase of the music, the one that's so forceful and so strong and filled with almost defiant self-righteousness. And, you know, I'm just a viola player, and I know this material well, but it's not so easy for me to explain what this metaphor means, especially on the line here with such a celebrated theologian as Dr. Marty. But I think the way I would best explain it would be to have you imagine a righteously loving father saying to his children, "I thirst so that your lives might be quenched." And then this second character of music makes sense. And if you take a step back and observe what Haydn has done, it's really amazing. He has, within the first minute of music, he's taken the literal meaning of these words, expressed that in the music so beautifully and effectively, and then he's treated these same two words as a metaphor, a complicated metaphor that even world-class scholars can have trouble explaining clearly. And he expresses this in the music as well. And, you know, I challenge anyone to come up with even one other example in the entire history of music when a composer has been able to do that so effectively.
Professor Marty, music moves us emotionally. How do you respond to this music of Haydn? Professor Marty, can you hear me? Oops. We seem to have lost Martin Marty. We'll try to find him again. Richard Young, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, we'll try to... we'll have to see if we can get Professor Marty back on the line. Let me just reintroduce our guest. Richard Young is the editor of a book called Echoes from Calvary, Meditations on Franz Joseph Haydn's The Seven Last Words of Christ. And this book, just published by... Roman and Littlefield, includes two CDs, and we've heard now from each of them. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs, and this is a live call-in show, so let me give the phone numbers so that listeners may give us a call and talk with Richard Young, Martin Marty, about this project. Anywhere the program is heard, you may call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station. In Champaign-Urbana, you can access three local lines by punching in 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, if you have a comment or question. For our guest today, Richard Young. Richard, tell me a little bit about this is an unusual project in that the proceeds from the sale of this book and CD, you have something special in mind. Tell our listeners about that. I see we're having a problem with our first caller, so our engineer will try to solve that. Let me take just a moment to let listeners know what's coming up on future Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, we'll be talking with Sharon Dorsey and some friends about their recent protest at the School of the Americas. That will be April 3rd here on Keeping the Faith. On April 10, we'll be talking with John Setterland and others about the crop walk and the process of raising money for helping the hungry around the world, a project of Church World Service. On April 17, our guest will be Joe Mann, a professor from Duke University. We'll be talking about the situation for small churches in America. He's an expert on small churches. He's a Methodist pastor. On April 24, we'll be talking about Haydn again, believe it or not, because of the creation, and it'll be performed by the Prairie Ensemble, directed by Kevin Kelly. So we're having a Haydn spring here on Keeping the Faith. Keeping the faith is provided, support for keeping the faith is provided in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois. Coming up at the Y this week, the Philippine Student Association will be talking with us on Tuesday at Know Your University. This is a example of what the Philippine Student Association does on campus, preserving the heritage for Philippine students, and they'll be showing some of their cultural dances and music. That's Tuesday at the University Y, a free talk and performance this coming Tuesday, March 29. And then coming up at the Y Friday, April 1st, and this is not an April Fool's joke, we're continuing our Friday Forum lecture series on the development goals for the United Nations for this current millennium. And the goal we'll be discussing at the lecture April 1st is eliminating extreme poverty and hunger around the world. And Anne Varghese will be from Bread for the World, will be giving us a talk and responding to questions. That's Friday at the University Y in Champaign, 1001 South Wright Street. Free lecture. You can purchase lunch at the Y or simply come and hear the lecture. Those are some of the programs coming up at the University Y. The creation and the creativity project for the local interfaith group called the Whirlwind Project, their next event will be a poetry and prose reading at Douglas Branch Library, Saturday, April 2nd at 3 p.m. So those are some of the religious events coming up in the Champaign-Urbana area. I think we have both of our guests back on the line. Can you hear me again?
Yes, I was cut off, and I've been glad to be back.
Good. Thank you, Dr. Marty. Let me ask Professor Marty, how do you respond emotionally to the music of Haydn in the Seven Last Words of Christ?
The ability of Haydn's music to reach the depth of the text is something that leads me to combine intellect and emotional response. And I must say that the pre-concert lectures, and much of that is material that Richard put into the book, informed me, too, how to listen for the two notes of I Thirst or whatever. And so I am now, my mind is so richly filled with what different people have said. The United Methodist minister whose daughter was killed in front of her eyes by a tornado, talking about, woman, behold thy son, son, behold thy mother. Sometimes I'll play versions of the quartet that don't have any of the words with them, and my mind just is full of all these kinds of connotations. I think that in one sense, good music always asks us to bring what we are and abandon ourselves to it. But I know very few places where the words and music are as well blended. I've heard his oratorio or cantatas to it, and I can hear the shadows of it. I have a friend who did a piano transcription of the string quartet. I even haven't even told Richard about that yet. Hmm. In every case, you're just lifted out of the other kinds of things you have. Somebody said, well, why should we, in a world where there's enough sorrow, why should we celebrate a week in which you're somber, et cetera? And I thought of that again this year. What better than music ministers to us while we're arguing these life and death cases, the Terry Schiavo case and that? This is music that is for that. It's not pop, but I can't picture any serious person that isn't going to be pulled to it and given it the second chance to be drawn deeply emotionally into it.
And Richard, before we were separated, I was asking you, this project is unusual in that the Seven Last Words book and CDs, you have an unusual idea of what to do with the proceeds. Tell our listeners about that.
Oh, I see. Well, look, there are more than 70 contributing authors to this book, people that have written meditations in the past and given permission for us to reprint them in this book. And I can't see myself parsing up royalties among 70 or so different people. And so what I asked everyone to do is, I guess, what I'm doing as well, and that is that we, whatever royalties come our way from the sale of this book is going to go to some kind of an inner-city fund or maybe a scholarship fund. But everyone is real comfortable with that, and it's I think that really is very close to what has motivated all of us on this project from the very first days.
Let's talk a little bit about Franz Joseph Haydn. Professor Marty, you're a historian of religion, and in your career you've produced many, many books. I don't know what the number is up to now. Last I heard, I think, was 60 or 70. That's about as many quartets as Haydn wrote. Tell us about a prolific author and listening to a prolific musician.
Well, I wouldn't mention myself in the same paragraph or library or universe with a genius like Haydn, but I think what we both share is a little theme that Richard puts at the bottom of the program. Richard, why don't you quote it exactly about the gift to Haydn and giving it back?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, you mean when he his aim when he first wrote this? Huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Boy, if I can remember it, it was he said that he wanted even the most uninitiated listener to be able to be moved to the very depths of his soul.
Yeah, and I'm drawn to that. I'm constantly writing about czars and Caesars and brigands and pirates and thieves and bad bishops and so on, and so I like to write about good bishops and saints and geniuses. And I think that the epigraph to the book, the one that Richard chose, is one that speaks to me very much. As God has given me a cheerful heart, may he forgive me for serving him cheerfully. I think it's the most beautiful thing. And I lead a good life. I'm 7 years into retirement this month, and my son's a photographer. I have a studio two-thirds of a mile from home. I walk over there in the morning and read my mail and sit in front of the computer, and I get to write books. And I just think, what a wonderful life. I hope I get 20 more years out of it. But that's pretty much the spirit, I think, in which we get Haydn's kind of music. He didn't have the mad fury combustion that Mozart had, who died so young. He could mellow in it, and he could keep growing. And I heard Chicago Symphony do some of his late symphonies this year, and the program notes reminded me, here was a man into his, quote, old age, who grew through it all. I think that's another thing that a lot of us... I'm writing a book about the mystery of the child right now and asking what are the characteristics of the child that live on among certain seniors, and Haydn certainly was one of them.
You know, one thing that is very different about this piece of Haydn that really separates it from so many others, particularly earlier than this, is that early on he was writing music only for rich folks. As the... in-house composer for people like Prince Esterhazy. And when he got this commission from this bishop in far-off Cadiz, Spain, to write this piece, it was clear to him that it was an opportunity to reach everyone. And I think that's kind of what we try to do in these performances, not just limit this experience to certain people.
Now, Haydn was born in 1732 in Europe, Austria, close to Hungary, lived 77 years, has been called the first great master of the quartet and the symphony. He wrote over his lifetime 104 symphonies, 76 string quartets, 24 operas, 16 masses, 3 oratorios, and this 7 last words of Christ. Just an amazing output.
Yes. Well, a lot of this, though, especially in the early days at Esterhazy, he was just churning this out at lightning speed. He had to come up with full programs every week, different programs. And this was very different in terms of motivation and the amount of time that he had to work on it.
I think we might remind ourselves, too, since one of the big themes in the Vermeer presentation of this is the, well, cross-cultural, mini-cultural. It's not politically correct, and it's not multicultural in the sense that only you can talk about your thing. It's exactly the opposite. You talk out of what you are across the boundaries. And really, it's an interesting historical footnote. We say Cadiz today doesn't mean a lot. That was extremely strategic in bringing two worlds together, two hemispheres together. If you'd been to the Western Hemisphere and you came back to Europe, Cadiz was very likely your port, and you may well have brought along these meditations on 7 words by young priests and missionaries in the Western Hemisphere. And similarly, it was a jumping-off point. So it isn't just Cadiz, but I think Haydn must have had some sense that he now is reaching into a new kind of world, and that may well be what's behind Richard Young's statement that he was always writing for Count Esterhazy and royalty. And this was a very democratic piece. And I think we can tell from the crowds at Rockefeller and wherever else they've taken it is that people come out of there on first hearing. And you asked me about being emotionally involved. They're emotionally involved, intellectually involved. I get to look out over the gathering and see people of all ages and several races taking it all in. So we could almost say that Cadiz was kind of a symbolic place where worlds met, and that's still the intention.
When we're talking today with Professor Martin Marty from the University of Chicago, one of the most well-known scholars in the field of religion, and we're talking with Richard Young, who is a member of the Vermeer String Quartet. Richard, we've not had you talk about the other members of the String Quartet. Could you do that for a moment? Who else plays with you?
Yes, well, it's quite a mixed bag. Talk about a mixture of various cultures and backgrounds. Dr. Marty said earlier, our first violinist is Shmuel Ashkenazi, originally from Israel. He is a Jew. Our second violinist is Matthias Take, who's from Germany. And actually, his dad was a minister. And, I'm the violist, and our cellist is Mark Johnson, and he's from Nebraska. So we've got two Americans of very different descriptions. I'm from New York originally, and so we have this end joke in the quartet that we have only one true American in the group.
But I'm a fellow Nebraskan, so we have a certain bond with the cellist.
We're talking about Echoes from Calvary, Meditations on Franz Joseph Haydn's The Seven Last Words of Christ, a recent 2005 publication by Roman and Littlefield. We've played portions of the CDs that are included with this book by permission of the publisher and by the permission from the editor, Richard Young, who's one of our guests today. How much does the book sell for?
I think retail is like $24.95, something like that.
Including the two CDs, so it's quite a bargain.
And they tell me it's at Borders and Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, the usual places. But you can also get it from a lot of additional information from the Vermeer Quartet website, which is www.vermeerqt.com.
Spell Vermeer for us.
V-E-R-M-E-E-R and then Q-T.com.
While we're talking the promotional side, again, you can see I'm blameless because none of us get royalties out of it, so I think we're free to plug away at it. I think one thing about this book, too, is that it's going to be a perennial. I mentioned before I have a son who with me makes books with pictures and meditations, and you can do them any year. Many books a person writes deal with last fall's political campaign or something like that, and they're done. This is a year-round book. I don't think it's only a Holy Week and Good Friday book. Today we're talking on Easter, and everything we talk about on Easter is the overcoming of death. It's the forgiving of the other. It's the empathy for the one with thirst. It's the enjoyment of paradise together. So I think you can read this on Christmas morning if you want. And I think it's a year-round book, and I think it's a year-in, year-out book. It came late in this season, just before this year's quartet performance at Rockefeller. But I just expect it to be around a long time.
The Vermeer String Quartet has played this around the world in many different venues, but Rockefeller Chapel at the University of Chicago in Hyde Park is an annual concert. Is that correct, Richard?
Yes, and boy, we couldn't have a more appropriate annual home for this.
What a wonderful setting.
Well, it's Rockefeller's history is it's an interfaith setting, and it's not linked to any one particular denomination, and it just fits in, I guess, with this overall theme that we've been talking about of wanting to enable everyone to feel welcome.
How long have you been performing there?
Oh, boy. I think the first one there was 96, 97, something like that.
And
this is an audience that is entirely different from any other audience we play for. Unfortunately, the chamber music audience, traditional audience, has not changed a whole lot since Haydn's day. Most of the people that that we play for, that all professional quartet players play for over the throughout the world, I can look out from my seat in virtually any concert hall in the world and see a sea of white faces, and it's mostly advantaged people. But boy, these audiences at Rockefeller are so inspiring, and we derive such inspiration, energy from them, because it's all sorts of folks. It's people who are, of course, making up the usual chamber music crowd or classical music crowd. It's people who are hearing a Haydn string quartet probably for the very first time in their lives. It's people straight across the entire Christian spectrum. It also includes many people who might describe themselves as non-Christians, even some people who are non-religious.
We're also three blocks from a major University of Chicago hospital, a huge hospital, and it often is on our minds and sometimes in our meditations that there are people that close suffering physically probably as much as Jesus on the cross. Terrible brain tumor, death, et cetera, like that. Well, sometimes we get representatives of them, and in the book, Richard tells about someone he invited in, a woman, just a couple weeks away from death, and it was the most moving thing, her twin sisters hearing it all. When it's done, the seven of us went out to greet. Cardinal George of Chicago was one of them, and he gave her a blessing, and Father Andrew Greeley ran over and just said, "I love you." And so you get a little bit like the New Testament world and the ancient Jewish world. You get the maimed, the halt, and the blind, people with all kinds of sufferings and agonies. It's a university community, so you also get, as you would at University of Illinois, people are asking questions of faith, trying to make sense of the world. And I still agree with what I said before. Very often, music can reach parts of the soul that aren't reached any other way. So between that setting and that music, and we hope the words that go with it, it's an experience, and I think he's tried to capture that in the book.
Now, is the concert at Rockefeller Chapel at the University of Chicago each Holy Week always on Wednesday?
Yes, it's always the Wednesday of Holy Week.
And is it does it cost something? Is it free?
It's virtually free. Because I've wanted to enable anybody to come. Never wanted to make money the issue, and so the admission, I think, is $10, and I think kids are, if you're 17 or under, you get in free. If I find out or if we find out that there are people that want to come that, you know, for whom even $10 is a reach, we just let them in. And that's, it just feels like the right thing to do.
Since
it's not, money is not what this is about.
Since this time of year, this program on WILL is heard in Chicago and in points between Champaign-Urbana and Chicago and even over into Indiana, let me just remind listeners that although you've missed the Vermeer String Quartet performance of Haydn's Seven Last Words of Christ for this Holy Week, make long-range plans to be in Hyde Park in South Chicago for next year, and as you've heard, just $10 to hear a live performance, and you pick different readers each year. Is that correct, Richard?
That's right, mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I always invite Dr. Marty and Dr. Jean Bethke Elstein from the University of Chicago. I mean, after all, this is their home turf.
And what about Dean Allison Bowden of Rockefeller Chapel?
Allison Bowden is the Dean of Rockefeller, sure. So my goodness, I mean, she's always involved.
Of course.
Always try to sort of shake things up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And always trying to have a certain balance, though.
Dr. Marty, who did you hear read last Wednesday that was new to you?
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit and say that she did it a couple years ago, but it wasn't as memorable. Addie Wyatt this year. Maybe Richard can even say more about it, but I just say, and I noticed the New York Times picked this up in Saturday's paper. They did a nice coverage on it. Addie Wyatt was very close to Martin Luther King, one of the great black leaders, probably the top woman in all the civil rights movements. She's now 81 and infirm and in a wheelchair, and she's a queen. We just all bow and respect when you see her. It's just instinctively. She has a dignity and a charism. And her friend wheeled her out in front of the microphone, and just before we went on, somebody had lost her script. Well, we followed script pretty closely because
these are scripts that each person who's reading it has written
it and so on. And I think she'd memorized it because the words were too eloquent to have just been cast in air. But But I think it went on a little longer because he started testifying. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm 81 and I'm not so well. And what used to be years become months. So what used to be months become weeks. What used to be weeks become days. And I'm really ready to, you know, for paradise and so on. Well, the audience was just, this is not mawkish at all. This was just the depth of a heart. So that's the one I would remember most this year.
We're down to our last 30 seconds. Richard Young, any last comments?
Well, I have to say that for me that was, I knew what she was planning on saying that night. And I think Dr. Marty's right. She pretty much stuck to what she had intended to say, but somehow because she was off the script and had to just reach down, not in her memory, but in her heart, it was so much more moving, I think, that it might have been otherwise. And after she finished, I could barely play. I could not see the notes on the page through the tears.
We're down to our last few seconds. So let me just thank our guest, Richard Young, violist for the Vermeer String Quartet and editor of Echoes from Calvary: Meditations on Franz Joseph Haydn's The Seven Last Words of Christ, published this year by Roman and Littlefield, available in bookstores. It includes two CDs. We've heard a few little bits of snippets of that during this program. Coming up on Keeping the Faith in the next few weeks, we have several guests. Next week, our guest will be talking about the School of the Americas, Sharon Dorsey, and other friends who were involved in the protest there just last month. And then we'll be talking with John Sutherland and others about the crop walk on April 10th. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Dressing terrorist angels, L.A. gangbangers covered in Virgin Mary tattoos to protect them from bullets, prophets in G-strings and pasties. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we're going to look for God in some unlikely places. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 Central Time here on WILL Urbana. AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s and north winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 60s and north winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low in the lower 40s and light and variable winds, becoming south around 10 miles per hour after midnight. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next. Sometimes